Well, the one quote that really stood out to me here is someone said, "I feel Connor Bedard needs help to be good." Celebrini, he's carrying his line, he's carrying his team. That's a crazy statement there.
The top four spots in the Central, unless you see like a Winnipeg or Dallas or any of these other teams go out and have a President's Trophy winning season again, I think it's going to be a tight race for, honestly, the top three spots in the Central Division. I don't have them finishing third in the division.
Where do you have them finishing?
I don't have them finishing second. I don't have them finishing first. I have them finishing fourth. Welcome to the Chuckin' From Behind podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We are actually, training camp has just officially started. How are you feeling about that? Because we have preseason hockey coming up here in about a week.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, there's games. We're recording this on Friday night. I believe there's a one game tomorrow, which is Saturday, September 20th. I think it's like the Blues and the Stars or something like that.
Yep.
I was right. Blues and the Stars tomorrow at 7 p.m. So hockey is officially back. Are you recording it? Are you uploading this Sunday or Saturday?
This is going to be uploaded on Saturday per usual.
So day of the upload, hockey's back. Hockey is back. First preseason game. Not going to watch it, but it's back. We have something to talk about. There's going to be players on the ice. We might have some good training camp stories. It's finally happening.
This is like how it always goes with every sport. It's like training camp starts or spring training or whatever, right? And then you have preseason starts. The first preseason game starts and concludes. I'm ready for regular season now. That's how it always goes.
Especially the first few preseason games are a bunch of rookies that aren't going to make the team.
You
NHL
have
NHL guys and junior players that are just there to see how they do, and then they just send them back down.
Half the roster will get sent down in like a week or so.
Even the last couple preseason games are mainly AHL players because they don't really want to play the vets. I wouldn't say the vets really need that preseason too much.
No, you see a lot of times too with like vets. They'll play like probably the first like two, three games and everything.
Yeah,
and
just then, to get a game under their belt, just get back up to game speed. And then it's just more about just getting in game shape.
And it's not even like where, you know, they're trying to throw the body or go hard. They're just trying to get a skate in, you know, get up the game speed and then, you know, go into the season healthy, fresh and everything and ready to go.
It can't be useful if you're a bunch of new guys. Like if you're a team that like had a lot of free agency or made a bunch of trades over the summer, it can be useful just to kind of get on the ice and see how they play as a group just to get some chemistry under their belt, work on different things, work on different looks on the power play, not have to worry about the pressure of a big real game.
That definitely does help. However, we do have some news to go over, and it feels like there's a new jersey reveal every single week at this point. The Red Wings and the Rangers both revealed centennial jerseys for their 100th season, as well as the Capitals brought in a third jersey just for this season. And my thoughts on, starting with the Red Wings and Rangers ones, I love the Red Wings one. It's a classic. The Rangers one, it's okay. I'm not a huge fan of it. I get, like, you brought up pre-recording. It's supposed to have an old-school styled look to it. I don't like the shade of blue, and I can see why a lot of people are on the train of it not being so good.
I mean, I think the Red Wings jersey is awesome. I think they nailed it. I completely agree with you in there. I mean, it's pretty much the same logo. I really like the stripes and the attention to detail, like the brown gloves and everything, the brown accents, like on the captain patch. It was a really nice touch, like that old school leather. And I really, really love the Rangers jerseys. I think they look straight out of like the 1920s, 1930s, which is what they are supposed to look like. I think they nailed that with just how, those jerseys were really simple back then. I mean, they literally wore like sweaters. That's why they call them sweaters still.
Oh,
yeah. They were like made out of freaking wool. They were hot.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I don't know. The shade of blue, if they ended up having their normal, like, royal shade of blue or whatever blue they have now,
But Zach, these are what they wore 100 years ago.
No, I know, but I think that the shade of blue is not good, and I don't know. I'm not a fan of Rangers jerseys in general.
I don't get you on that one. I think the Rangers have one of the best jersey kits in the league.
Jersey kits, no.
Now, speaking of hideous, the Capitals, their jersey, I do not like that at all. You know how I feel about red jerseys. The Red Wings are like pretty much the only exception, the Red Wings and the Canadiens. The rest of them, I'm not really a big fan of, never really have been.
Okay, I'm looking at it now more than I think about it. I don't love them. I like them. because I'm going with another trend with all these jerseys where I don't, for some reason, I don't like the fact that the shoulders are different than, like, you know, the body and the sleeves and stuff like that. I love the placing of the stripes. I love the Screaming Eagle. It's still one of the best alternate logos in the entire league. But I honestly, out of 10, I'd probably give it a 7. And if they did, let's say, have just no white shoulders and they did have it straight red with the body and maybe did a little bit something else, I don't know.
This kind of gives me the vibes of, like, the Sabres reverse retro goat head jerseys.
Okay.
Wasn't a big fan of those. Like, it was pretty much just like their third alternate jersey just in their primary colors, which I don't think ever really is a good look. There's probably some rare instances where they came out okay, but yeah, I think the Screaming Eagle's better off on the black jerseys.
Yeah, the Screaming Eagle on the black jersey is definitely still one of the best alternate jerseys out there.
Yes, elite.
I mean, yeah, it really is elite. So we have – sorry, I had to go back to my sheet. All right, so Anze Kopitar will unfortunately retire after this season. He announced yesterday. What a career he's had.
Yep.
First ballot Hall of Famer for sure. I hope you agree with me.
I don't think I'd be allowed to call myself a hockey fan if I didn't agree with you. Anze Kopitar is one of the best players of all time. He will be on the Hall of Fame as soon as he's eligible.
It's not even like a debate. Like, if somebody sits there and says arguably a Hall of Famer, like, it's not an argument at all. I mean, he has 2 Stanley Cups, 2 Selkies, 3 Lady Bings. He won the Mark Messier Award in 2022. He was a hard finalist in 2018. As well as this season, he will achieve the 1,300 career point mark, unless he has, like, 30 points this
season.
And
should get to 1,500 games as well.
Yeah, he will. Unless, again, he just doesn't play half the season. So. Yeah. I mean, a remarkable career. Personally, I don't know if this is arguable or not or whatever. I don't think it is. But still, one of the best two-way forwards to ever play the game.
He was just so consistent for such a long time. If you look at his point metrics, points don't tell the whole story of the Kopitar. I just wanted to make it there. He's one of the best two-way forwards in the league. He's just as good defensively as he is offensively. But his lowest point output in the season was during the 2012-13 season, which was a 48-game shortened season. He played 47 games and only had 42 points.
Yep.
Statistically, that was his worst season. That's kind of crazy. He was old.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was looking at assists. I'm dumb, sorry. I was looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was statistically his worst season. Like, you go through, and I was going through yesterday when he announced it while I was waiting for the Bills game to start or whatever. And I was, like, looking. I was like, okay, how many point-per-game seasons does he have? He didn't have a ton of point-per-game seasons. I think he only had 1 point-per-game season. But you look at, he's having 60 points in 80 games, a lot of 70-point seasons. Like, we're talking, like, a lot. Like, half of his seasons are 65-plus points, too. Majority of them. Sorry, not just half, but the majority of them. So he plays a great 200-foot game. He's not going to give you 30 goals a season. I mean, he only has 30 goals, looks like, three times in his career. So, I mean, he's going to make plays with the puck. He's going to beat you with his IQ and overall also beat you with his defensive game because he's been one of the most reliable Kings players in franchise history, if you're being completely honest with
you. He should be a statue in the plaza there with all the other LA sports statues that they built. You know, I was talking about this with our friend Chris. Like, if Dustin Brown got a statue, Anze Kopitar should definitely get a statue.
I really hope so. Kopitar, I get Dustin Brown was the captain of those cup teams and everything, but, like, Kopitar was
They don't win those cups without Kopitar either. There was a lot of really great players on those teams. Drew Doughty's probably another guy that's probably going to get a statue built when he retires. Arguably Jonathan Quick as well. Anze Kopitar should have his number retired by the Kings as well. He's just that great of a player. I mean, hats off to him on an incredible career, and hopefully he can finish strong this year.
Yeah, hopefully he does finish strong and give us another remarkable year. And who knows, maybe goes out on another Selke Award winner. Who knows? All right, so last but not least, we are going to be reacting to some player polls that ended up coming out. I believe 39 players ended up voting on this.
So just some context for this for people that aren't aware of this. I know it's a small sample size, but this was done at the NHL Media Tours that they did. So it's a lot of big-name players. I think every team has one or two guys at least out there talking to the media. So there's only about, like, maybe 50 guys there, 50 to 40 guys max. So 39 is a pretty good sample size for the amount of players that were there. And these are all high-profile players. So just keep this in mind. These aren't just, like, random low tier fourth liners that are getting interviewed, mm-hmm. like us. These are probably Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, guys like that.
Do you want me to go through each poll and everything, or just like do the normal?
Yeah, I don't think there's that many topics they asked him about.
No, there's not. All right, so first up, the top team on NHLers trade me here list. We have the Panthers led the way with 14 votes. The Stars with 6, Lightning and Golden Knights both at 5. The Rangers at 3, Avalanche at 2, and then others just 5. Whatever.
Not really any surprises here. I'm not shocked at all with Florida being at the top of the list. It's a no tax state, so you get more money on your paychecks. But also, they have an incredible team. What player wouldn't want to be there? You have a chance to win a Stanley Cup.
Exactly. With the salary cap skyrocketing, are you more open to a short-term deal? 21 overwhelmingly said yes, 7 said no, and then 8 said either way.
Yeah, that makes sense too. I think things were already trending that way. I think Austin Matthews was kind of started that trend when he's taking the shorter term deals. He could get 8-year deals if he wanted to. He can get whatever contract he asked for, but he's deliberately choosing to. Wouldn't shock me if on Kaprizov's next contract, if it's a 4 or 5 year deal, another short term deal, it gives you a chance to get more money and have more options open later in your career.
I will. So here's a quote from the article from a Western Conference forward. He goes, if you look at the caps rising where you can make more money, maybe that's when you lean on signing more bridges and making more money in the future. I mean, if you ask me, security and getting to know that you're going to be in the city for 6 years, maybe way more than making the most amount of money. Right. But also it depends on the player. Mm-hmm. What I like is if you're a younger player that wants to bet on yourself, now at least you have the possibility to take different routes and what you want to do for your career. So again, that kind of breaks down to, it all depends on the player too. Maybe one player, let's say, is a 25-year-old middle six guy, for example. Maybe he wants stability. Maybe he already built a family in, let's say, Vancouver, for example. He doesn't care about the team. He wants to stay there. Maybe there's another guy, like a Mason McTavish, for example. I don't know.
What's going on with his contract, though? I know we're getting off base, but why haven't they signed him yet?
Dude, he's skating with the Ottawa 67s right now. Yeah. They are not even close to a contract.
Yeah, this is crazy. Another topic for another day, but...
Yeah. But like you can have other guys like Mason McTavish that's like, you know what, I want a 3-year by $7 million deal, and then now, you know, bet on myself. So there's that. Another one is, besides hockey, which Olympic sport are you most looking forward to watching? All ski events, alpine skiing, snowboarding, cross country skiing, speed skating, and the list goes on. A lot of skiing there too.
It seems skiing like you guys is crazy. Have you watched the skiing in the Olympics?
Not that I can remember.
This year in the Olympics, I'm going to make you watch, especially the high jump. Dude, it's nuts. Dude, they jump off like a hill. Like, I don't even, it's ridiculous. Like, if you don't land that jump right, you will die.
It's crazy, that high up.
And they're going they just go straight down a freaking ramp and they just launch themselves. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
The next one that I'm actually very intrigued with. How much do you expect Connor McDavid to sign for? 9 said 15 to 15.9 million. 13 said 16 to 16.9 million, which led their way. And then the list goes on. You had 4 people that said 18 to 19 million. And then 6 said whatever he wants. Just give him the blank check and whatever he wants, he can have.
If I was being pulled on this, I probably would have said whatever he wants, because that's the reality of it, right? I think if he wants between 16 to 17, that's what he'll get. If he wants 20 million, who's Edmonton to tell him no?
Yeah, I mean, if you're Edmonton and McDavid's like, I want 19.1, which according to this article is the current max at the moment, you're not going to say no. Like, if you say no to that and be like, that's too much money, you deserve to have him walk at that point.
Yeah, if Connor McDavid walks in free agency, that whole front office is gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 1,000%. Yeah. How much do you expect Kirill Kaprizov to sign for? You had 10, which led the way at 15 to 15.9 million, which I would expect. And then you had 8 coming at 13 to 13.9 million. If I was doing this, like you brought up, I think that he's probably going to get around 15.9 million or so, or 16 million. I think he does get that 16.
I think like the 14 to 16 million dollar range is what I would expect.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna, I think it's gonna be a contract similar to Austin Matthews a bit. I don't know what his cap hit is off the top of my head. Let me pull that up real quick.
Matthews?
Yeah, so it's 13.25. I think I don't think it's gonna reset the market. I think like 15 is a good number. for me personally. And I think McDavid's really going to be the one that resets that market. Or it could be whatever comes first.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can look at it this way. And this isn't a situation between those two where it's like, okay, how I want to wait to see how much he signs for so that I can maybe get an extra $1 million, right? It's like,
That could be a holdup too, is like waiting for McDavid to see what he sets the market at. And then obviously everyone's going to be under McDavid. But then you could say, like, look, I know McDavid's getting $19 million, but I'm worth at least $17 million. Look at my production compared to his.
It can also work in against them too. Like, if let's say McDavid goes for 16 in a while, like, we'll give you 14, you know, and now you're losing.
McDavid's going to have a really big say. Like, there's a little bit of pressure on him too with this contract, because not only is he signing what's best for him, but he's going to set a market.
Oh, he is going to set the market 1,000%. Like you said, if he signs for that max at $19 million, now Kaprizov is going to, again, probably asked for 16 to 17 million, and he already turned down a $16 million contract a year for 8 years. So I don't know.
I can't think of one NHL star right now that would even have the gall to ask for more money than Connor McDavid.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think McDavid should be the highest paid player in the league by far.
Yeah.
All right. This is the one that I think raised a lot of eyebrows. Not including current stars, who's the next face of the NHL. Out of 39 responses, 24 of them went to Macklin Celebrini. 4 of them went to not even in the NHL yet, Gavin McKenna. 3, Connor Bedard. 2, Matthew Schaefer.
And 6 others, so it could be anybody, really.
It looks James Hagans, Parekh, Carlson. Yeah, whatever.
Jack Hughes, that's an interesting one.
I'm not surprised by Jack Hughes.
He's a little... Really? He's a little bit on the older side now, though.
No. You want to know what I am surprised, though? Macklin at 24 votes.
Overwhelmingly people voted for him. Yeah, that was kind of surprising. I thought it'd be kind of split. I don't know. The one quote that really stood out to me here is someone said, "I feel Connor Bedard needs help to be good. Celebrini, he's carrying his line. He's carrying his team." That's a crazy statement there.
That is okay. First off, I don't like that comment about Connor Bedard and Macklin, because look at who Macklin Celebrini has, and then look who Connor.
I
mean, Bedard
I will
has.
Say both their teams are awful, but I Correct. Do agree with you. I think there's way more pressure on Connor Bedard to be great. I think Celebrini has a little bit more support around him, like. He has another really young, good player in Will Smith. And I think Tyler Toffoli was a really good guy that they brought in to be a good support system for Macklin. And then in Chicago, who does really Bedard have to, you know, kind of support and take some of the load off his shoulders? Nick Foligno?
Tyler Bertuzzi?
Yeah. Like, seriously.
Yeah. It is. Like, that's the one comment I don't like, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of wild to me that they think Bedard does need help. Like, I don't think that's a wild statement, but like the NHL there's 20 guys on your team, right? Mm-hmm. There's 18 skaters. One guy doesn't really carry a team. It's a team sport. If that was the case, then Edmonton would have won 2 Stanley Cups because they have the best player, right? And Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the team doesn't show up. You can't win.
I mean, I would be okay with this comment if it didn't include Celebrini carrying the line.
Celebrini's played 1 year, man. And the Sharks came in, they came in last place last year.
Yeah, again, with 59 points or something.
Yeah, like they were not a good team. Chicago wasn't much better, but they're both horrible teams. And I think it's way too early in both of their careers to make a statement like that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like the comment of Celebrini being a crossbreed of Crosby and Bergeron.
Oh, I think he's a complete package. Mm-hmm. He's a great player, but I think it's a little too early to make that statement. I think they're both going to be faces of the league.
Yeah, by far. What do you think of going to 84-game seasons, 32 of them out of 39 said like it again? We knew this coming in, like most players were in favor of the 84-game season, which is why it got implemented into the new CBA. There's not an issue with that. How many more? Okay, there looks like there's 2 more of these. Who's the NHL defenseman you find hardest to compete against? Of course, Gustav Forsling. Sorry. Cale Makar had 10, Slavin 8, Forsling 6, Hughes 5, and then Hedman 2 with Lindell at 2.
So it's interesting. I'm looking at the list of guys who we each received a vote, and one name that kind of was like, what's he doing here?
I know.
Nikita Zadorov. I mean, I guess maybe because he like literally tried to murder you in the corner. But outside of that, I don't know, because, I mean, Gudis, he's also terrifying. Mm-hmm. Roman Josi, Drew Doughty, McAvoy, Dahlin, Heiskanen. Nico Mikkola is an interesting name there. I wonder if a Panther teammate put that there.
Either that, or it could be playing on the Panthers kind of, you know, gave him a little bit of a boost too. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but Cal Makar being number one isn't really surprising. I think he's the best defenseman in the league. Slavin, very, like, we talk about him a lot. I think he's still underrated, I think, from a fan base perspective. I think the players mm-hmm. understand how good he is. That's why. But, yeah, nothing too surprising here.
Last one. I'm a huge fan of this. Do you think the NHL should have an award for best defensive defenseman? 34 said yes. Give them some fucking love. Dude,
I agree with you. Yeah, well, we've talked about this before when we talked about the Norris. Is it's kind of turned into who gets the most points, right?
Yeah,
and I don't really think that's fair to measure a defenseman that way, because defensemen have to do a lot more than just score points. Now, when you look at a guy like Cale Makar, he can put up 90 points in a season, but he can mm-hmm. also play really good defense. So he's a special case. But there are other players like Jacob Slavin's one of them that he's not going to get. Like, I don't even know if he'll get 40 points in a season, right?
Right.
But he's so good in his own zone, and he makes plays that doesn't show up on a score sheet.
Dude, you see, there's a lot of defensemen. Like, bringing up Ratko Gudas, for example, mm-hmm. he is one of those guys that very underrated defensive guy. And, you know, there's a reason why the Ducks gave him that contract. There's a reason why they gave him a seed. There's so many reasons on the why he's had such a long career, is because he's, again, defensive lockdown. Same thing with Slavin. Slavin has a little bit more love because, hey, he's playing on a Stanley Cup contender, Carolina, and B, we just saw, like, you know, I've seen some people say, oh, Jacob Slavin's coming out party for the Four Nations. No, he's been like this for the past three seasons now.
He finally got a national spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the Four Nations Faceoff was like one of the most viewed hockey events ever, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. This episode is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Football is back, and there's no better way to get into the action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers, this one's for you. Bet just $5 and you'll score $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's right, no waiting, no gimmicks. Just place your first $5 wager and boom, $200 in bonus bets dropped right into your account if you use code THPN. That's right, but that's not all. You also get $200 off NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. That means every touchdown, every highlight, every heart-pounding moment streamed right to your screen. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code THPN. That's THPN to unlock $200 in bonus bets instantly when you place your first $5 bet, plus $200 off NFL Sunday Ticket. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY, that is 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for gambling problems. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort Kansas, fees may apply in Illinois. Must be the age of 21 years or older. Age and eligibility vary by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 7 days after assurance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/promos for details. NFL Sunday Ticket offer for new subscribers only. Auto renews until canceled. Digital games and commercial use excluded. Restrictions apply. Additional terms at youtube.com/NFL Sunday Ticket/terms. Limited time offer.
All right. Quick time out before we get back to the action. This episode is brought to you by Dubby Energy. Listen, hockey's fast, and whether you're breaking down plays, yelling shoot from the couch, or just getting in a workout, you've got to stay sharp. That's where Dubby comes in. Clean energy with zero sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or dyes. Just 150 milligrams of caffeine per serving, about 2 cups of coffee's worth to keep you locked in and ready to go. Personally, I use Dubby before the gym, on the ice, and even when prepping content for the pod. If you need that extra spark, whether you're grinding through work, lifting, or lacing up the skates, Dubby's got you covered. Head over to Dubby.gg and use code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. That's Dubby.gg, code CFBPOD for 10% off your order. Fuel up. Stay locked in, and let's get back to the episode. All right, let's hop into our season previews for the Central Division. It feels so nice not to talk about the Eastern Conference on a week-to-week basis, to be honest with you. All right, starting with the Chicago Blackhawks, last season's record, 25-46-11, 61 points, finishing 8th in the Central Division. Key additions, Sam Lafferty, Andrei Burakovsky, key subtractions, Pat Maroon, Joe Valino, TJ Brody, Alec Martinez, and Philip Kirishev. Just some more notable moves they made. They ended up signing Frank Nazar to a 7x6.59 million contract extension, signed Ryan Donato to a 4x4 contract extension, and they drafted Anton Frondell.
Yeah, so Chicago,
what a team.
they're a team.
What a team, dude.
They're in an interesting spot right now where, you know, we thought they were going to be big fish hunting in free agency. Clearly, they weren't. They really didn't add much. You know, I know they had some draft picks, but, you know, trading for Sam Lafferty, you know, plug it on your fourth line, doesn't really move the needle. Burakovsky was kind of a cap dump from Seattle. Maybe he'll have a chance to bounce back there. He'll have plenty of offensive opportunity in that top six. He should be able to walk right into that top six, but it's kind of like they're taking a gamble there because, I mean, he was okay last year, 37 points, and I think he'll have a good chance to bounce back in Chicago this year. But outside of that, they're just banking on their young talent to continue to develop. You know, but people will say Bedard might have took a step back last year. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. They signed Frank Nazar to that extension that was kind of baffling, to be completely honest with you. I didn't see a rush to get him signed to a team, like a contract that soon, but Chicago really likes him. So
there is, I have a lot of issues with this team. However, though, going into the season though, I think that Andrei Burakovsky is a step up to whoever they had at left wing next to him last year. Because if you look at Burakovsky, he's not, again, he had 37 points in 80 games or 79 games last season. He's not going to jump off the page. He only had 14 minutes average time on ice per season on a Seattle team that wasn't great, and he didn't have a ton of support. He wasn't getting the opportunities. And if he can stay on the ice and be healthy, he can give you 45, 50 points playing next to Connor Bedard. In 22-23 and then 23-24, he played 49 games apiece. He was dealing with injuries. He ended some time in Colorado and Washington, also dealt with some injury trouble. So if he can stay healthy, I don't necessarily hate that he can get back to his 45-point self where he was in Colorado in 2019-20. By the way, he only played 58 games that season. So I think Burakovsky and Donato next to Bedard, which is what is projected out to be, much of an upgrade compared to Teravainen and Bertuzzi next to Bedard. However, though, Frank Nazar slotted in there at the projected second-line center next to Teravainen and Bertuzzi. I think Frank Nazar is going to be a hell of a player. That contract is such a gamble, and if it pays off, he's going to be an absolute steal in 3-4 years when the salary cap is going through the roof and players are asking for double that amount of money for players of his stature. So I think overall, the makeup of this lineup, I don't think they're a good team, but I will go back on what I said a few months ago or whatever it was during the offseason where I think that Davidson has done a bad job. He hasn't necessarily done a bad job. Like, I know I get kind of pissed off at him for not giving Bedard, quote-unquote, the help. But at the end of the day, you have the prospects coming up through the system. You have the surrounding depth pieces around Bedard. Now it's just about eventually having to go out and get, I guess, a top-line scoring winger to pair with him. But also, though, I mean, you have Anton Frindell, who you just drafted, right? You have Levshinov, who is expected to make a full-time jump to the NHL this season. So you have also some of the young pieces. So well,
their blue line is extremely young. Just it looking is. The oldest guy is going to be 24. I know they have Shea Weber contract, but he ain't playing. But,
yeah.
You know, Kevin Korchinski's an interesting player for them. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's kind of not really panned out to what they wanted him to be so far. He split time last year. He spent most of last season in the AHL, actually. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, he spent the whole season in the NHL. I'm expecting him to stick around this year. But this is a team that's going to have their struggles. They're still one of the youngest teams in the league. I think Spencer Knight could possibly be their long-term goalie. I still think there's question marks there about whether he truly is or not. I think he's going to struggle this year behind a very young and experienced blue line.
I mean, they did give him that that extension, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention that in the notable moves. But, yeah, it was a 3x5.
This happened the other day, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, I mean, Spencer Knight is a guy that I think he will have his struggles, but also I think he can still have a pretty solid year. I know in only 15 games in Chicago, he had an .896 save percentage, which isn't great. But when the league average save percentage is .903 and you're on a very bad Chicago team defensively, offensively, whatever, it's like, okay, it's not as bad as what it may look like on paper. And we've seen Spencer Knight show promise in his game, right? I mean, in Florida he did. In the AHL when he was still with Florida. I mean, He has shown it throughout his entire career, coming up through college, coming out through juniors. So I think that if he can take the step in the right direction, that this team can go from 61 points or whatever it was. So, okay, they're not going to quite reach 70 points, but they can, you know, get an extra couple wins, maybe an extra couple four wins, maybe turn a couple of those, you know, I don't know, overtime losses into overtime wins. And it's not necessarily about making a 15-point jump this season. It's about making, you know, baby steps, because in order to make the big jumps eventually, you also have to take the baby steps in the beginning, and that's just me.
Yeah, I have pretty low expectations for this team. I feel like they're going to be pretty bad this year. They are going to be in the Gavin McKenna sweepstakes. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. They have Connor Bedard and Gavin McKenna. That would be terrifying.
I think they would be set.
Yeah, I mean, they still have to put the right pieces around them, but they have plenty of cap space going forward. So, you know, if this free agent class ends up being as good as people think it's going to be, they could be big players in free agency.
Yeah. Where do you have them finishing in the division? I'm not even going to bring up playoffs.
Eighth place. I think they're the worst team in this division. I think they'll be a little bit better than they were last year, but especially defensively, I expect this team to struggle.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that this team is going to finish eighth in the Central Division, and honestly, I don't really think it's necessarily close. Coming in next, we have the Colorado Avalanche. Last season's record, 49-29-4 for 102 points, third in the Central Division. Key additions, Victor Olofsson, Gavin Brindley, Brent Burns. Key subtractions, Charlie Coyle, Miles Wood, Jonathan Drouin, Jimmy Vesey, and Ryan Lindgren. Their only other notable offseason move, they signed Josh Manson to a 2x3.95 extension.
Yeah, this is an interesting team to me because arguably they should have beat the Dallas Stars last year in the first round of the playoffs. They kind of choked in game seven there. They had a two-goal lead in the third period, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Rantanen just like put the team on his back, which is kind of crazy that Rantanen did that to his old team. He's even in Dallas still, but
right.
Yeah, they don't really have a lot of money to work with, so I was expecting them to have a bit of a quieter offseason. I see Victor Olofsson is kind of like their Jonathan Drouin replacement guy, can slot in the second power play, just has a good shot, right? Brent Burns is an interesting add. He can still move the puck well for his age. And they're not going to ask him to do a ton. They have Cale Makar there and Devin Taves. They have a really great blue line. And I think the biggest thing was they're going to get a full year of really good goaltending, right?
Yeah.
Like they bring in Mackenzie Blackwood and Scott Wedgwood last year, and that completely transformed the team. Where last year, you could say the only thing that's stopping this team from being a legit cup contender was goaltending. And they went out and addressed that in a big way. And I think getting a full year of consistent goaltending is going to do wonders for this team. And I think he's going to have way more confidence going into the playoffs.
I agree. I think that Mackenzie Blackwood was hidden in San Jose, and he was playing a damn good job for what he was given in San Jose. I mean, he was getting like 40 shots a night against, it felt like. And as long as you have Makar, as long as you have McKinnon, as long as you have Martin Natchez, like, you're going to be competitive. You're going to finish top three in the division. And I shouldn't have said that because you guys will find out later. but like retaining Brock Nelson, I think was okay. I know he wasn't.
Well, he was great. A no show in the playoffs. Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he had no points in all 11 games, if I'm not mistaken. I think the top six and arguably the top nine is good, but I worry a little bit about the depth. But I think on paper, this team is. It is good. It genuinely is good. I like the Brent Burns edition. Again, I love the goaltending, and I think this team, they're as close to a cup contender as you can get to, but I don't necessarily think they're quite to a cup contender. However, though, I don't know if you saw the quote that McFarland said about the Avalanche team, but he said that this is the deepest Avalanche team that they have had in the McKinnon era, if I'm not mistaken,
I don't know.
The deepest team that he's had as a GM. Whatever, I don't
that
know.
That might be true, but when they won the Stanley Cup, that team was loaded.
Oh, he wasn't a GM when
it was Joe Sakic still.
Was McFarland, he was in the organization though, right?
I think he was like the assistant GM or something, but happened was he was going to get GM offers from other teams and they didn't want to lose him. So Joe Sakic like stepped out of the GM role and I think he became like president of hockey operations or something. So they let him come in and take that GM role. So they didn't want to lose him because they knew he wasn't going to be a GM somewhere and they wanted him to stay in that organization because they like him that much.
That makes sense. Okay. He probably didn't mean like as his tenure as the actual general manager. I would be very shocked if it was. I mean, dude, that 21-22 team.
Oh, that team was loaded. That team was loaded, yeah.
It was ridiculously good. I mean, they rolled through everybody in the regular season and in the playoffs. They made the Tampa Bay Lightning look like fools. I mean, the Blues somehow pushed into six games, which was ridiculous in the second round, but that's besides the point. Yeah, I think the Avalanche are – they're good. I think they're good. Mm-hmm. And the reason I said about the third in the division type stuff is because I don't have them finishing third in the division.
Where do you have them finishing?
I don't have them finishing second. I don't have them finishing first. I have them finishing fourth.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit too low on this team because I go on these highs and lows. Like last offseason, I was like, Calgary's going to suck. And I said, Chicago's somehow going to get to 500. It's the exact opposite. This offseason, by the way, those are the two most egregious takes I've ever had.
The Flames one was probably the worst team one you've ever had.
No, I think the Hawks one was just as bad.
No, you could somewhat justify it. I didn't think the Hawks were going to be as bad as they were last year. But what did you say? The Flames are going to win like 15 games or something insane like that.
I think I said like they would be lucky to get like 23 wins or something.
That's wild.
They had 23 wins by New Year's.
Yeah, that's wild. They weren't that bad.
No, I don't know. I just didn't like them. But yeah, I do have the Avalanche finishing fourth in the division. And yes, they're still going to be a wild card team. I think it's really going to come down to them and another team. They're going to be fighting it out for that third spot. And you could even argue the second spot. I think that really, honestly, actually, I'm even going further to this. I think the top four spots in the Central, unless you see like a Winnipeg or Dallas or any of these other teams go out and have a President's Trophy winning season again, I think it's going to be a tight race for, honestly, the top three spots in the Central Division.
I agree. I think it's going to be a very competitive division. I think this might be outside of the Atlantic Division, like arguably one of the best divisions in the league. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic's pretty stacked, but the Central's right up there with them.
Yeah, for sure. Where do you have them?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because there's a lot of great teams in this division. I can't justify it in my brain them not being a top three team in the division. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have them finish second.
Okay, I don't hate that. Again, it's up in the air, and we can see come the trade deadline, like we can see a bunch of movement between the top four teams. Like one night we have this team in second, and then the next, you know, three nights later, now they're in fourth, and there's going to be a lot of movement. Again, I really do think that.
Yeah, I'm not expecting Winnipeg to kind of run away with the division again like they did last year. I think Winnipeg will take a bit of a step back. Like they're still going to be a good team. We'll get to them later, but... Yeah, this is a super competitive division. Like you can make the argument, I think, for three teams legitimately to win that division. I think Colorado's one of them.
Coming up next here, the Dallas Stars. Last season record, they were 40-26-6, 106 points, second in the Central Division. Key additions, Nathan Bastian, Radek Faksa. Key subtraction, Mikael Granlund, Brendan Smith, Evgeny Dadonov. Some other notable offseason moves, they extended Matt Duchene 4x4.5, extended because it was before July 1st, by the way, guys. Nils Lundqvist, 1x1.25 extension, and the Maverick Bork, 1x950,000 extension. Again, like I said, guys, it is before July 1st, so it's technically an extension. But I love this Dallas Stars team, man. Like, you know, like I've been on the wagon the last couple of years, and I think this team has what it takes. They have Mikko Rantanen for an offseason, and I think that their depth is just – it's still some of the best in the league. Bringing back Duchene for the next 4 years, and I know he wasn't great in the playoffs, but he still had 82 points in 82 games this past season for the Dallas Stars. You have, I know, Sagan and Jamie Benn are getting older. They're starting to become liabilities actually now. But you had Sagan come back from a multiple month-long injury that he suffered in early November. And having Wyatt Johnson, Mikko Rantanen, Robertson, Roope Hintz, like those are all first-line guys, first-line players on a lot of teams. Now, not every team, of course, but you have guys that are going to be playing on their second line that could be a lot of teams' first-line players. So I think their depth is really what's going to win them games. And I think, again, the key thing, I guess, topic coming into the season is new head coach, right? You fired Pete DeBoer after DJ Gottinger comments. And frankly, honestly, I thought he was going to get fired no matter whether those comments happened or not. But I think the Stars kind of had an excuse to be like, hey, he made those comments about him, so we're going to fire him now. So,
yeah, for me, this team, they didn't really change much roster-wise going into the season. This is a team to me that I think is running out of excuses to not win.
Yeah.
Obviously, Peter DeBoer is gone. Could be a curse because typically team, at least the last team he was at, ended up getting a lot better after he left.
Was that Vegas?
Yeah, I won the Stanley Cup after he left. Mm-hmm. Glenn Gluzan, I probably said that wrong, you know, has a really good team to step in. Maybe a change, a new voice, new leader is all this team needed because – correct me if I'm wrong, but they're pretty much running it back with the same team.
They are,
last year. Not really many differences. This team is deep. I really don't know what else to say about them, but you know they're kind of running out of time to, I think, be able to maintain all this depth that they've had for such a long time, and still, and like their window's still open for a couple. I'm not saying it's going to close anytime soon, but this is about as deep of a team as you can get.
I will agree and disagree with you. I know that's weird, but I agree with the fact that their window's still open. I think their window's still open for like 5+ years, if I'm being honest with you. And I do disagree in terms of the depth. Like I think the only issue that I have in terms of retaining that is just retaining Jason Robertson and Thomas Harley, who are both eligible to be RFAs next offseason. However, though, both are eligible, so you do have that in your back pocket. But Jason Robertson and the Dallas Stars, they're at a stalemate for an extension. Both parties do want to get a long-term extension done, according to Elliot Friedman. And as terms of Thomas Harley, I think we won't see a contract until next year, next offseason, and I guarantee you he is going to be getting paid. Like, he is going to get paid.
You kind of did agree with me, though, because I was saying that I think this is the best depth they're going to have.
Their depth, I think – their depth can't get any better than this.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
Okay, I do see your point now. Like, you can't add to this team, like, genuinely.
I'm sure they will add. I'm sure they'll probably acquire at the deadline. They normally do. Cup contenders normally do. Mm-hmm. They don't have a first-round pick this year because they gave up a lot for Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah.
But I could see them just adding, like, a depth piece. I don't think they need a top six forward unless they have injuries going into the playoffs because, like you said, this top six is pretty loaded. This top nine is pretty loaded, right?
Yeah,
like, they just kind of need to get over themselves and just they're running out of excuses to not win, right? I know that there's some really good teams in the Western Conference, but they have a really good team too. And, you know, losing to the same year team twice in kind of the same way both years is unacceptable in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It is very unacceptable. And I always bring this up with the Dallas Stars. Like, ever since they went up 2-1 against the Oilers in the first Western Conference meeting, they have been absolutely embarrassed, whether they were in Edmonton or Dallas. And if I do it off the top of my head, they have in the series, they have two wins, and they had they're 2-6, I believe, against Edmonton in the Western Conference Finals since they went up 2-1 in 2024. So, I mean, again, you have to change your ways. The only team that's stopping the Dallas Stars, honestly, is themselves and in the Edmonton Oilers, of course. I mean, at the end of the day, this team's window is still open. I think this is still one of the best teams, not only in the Western Conference, but also in the entire league. And it's Stanley Cup or bust, as we've been saying the last four or five seasons for this team. And this is the best team that I think the Dallas Stars have had. Retaining Matthew Shane, like I said, was huge. And, you know, Wyatt Johnson is going to have to be a more consistent player when it matters most. He's shown us that he can be an absolute star in the regular season. He's had big goals in game sevens, mind you, in the playoffs. But in the Western Conference Finals, though, like, it's not only him, though. It's like Jason Robertson going quiet. Mikko Rantanen after that ridiculous stretch of games. Crickets from him. And then Jake Ottinger allows 2 goals on 2 shots in the elimination game, and everybody starts throwing blame at him. Like, we're not doing that, dude. Like, I get what it's easy to be the scapegoat when it looks like you're messing up, but when you're not scoring goals, you have to put the blame somewhere else besides goaltending or defense. And I will say, though, the Dallas Stars do have to clean it up defensively against the Edmonton Oilers because they were just having breakdown after breakdown after breakdown. But overall, as a team, though, I think the sky's the limit for them. The only, again, like I said, the only thing that's going to beat them, I think, now is going to be themselves. Like, genuinely, I threw that Edmonton Oilers thing out as a joke. But, like, this team should be the favorite out of the Western Conference, personally, if you were looking on terms on just on paper.
Well, I think this team in Vegas that should be the favorite. But I think, yeah, I think Dallas is really good. Mm-hmm. I'll hop into my prediction for them for this season. I think they will win the Central Division. I don't think there's an excuse for them not to, really.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, and yeah, they're a playoff team. It's cup or bust. Yeah, they know what they need to do.
I'm with you. I am going with them winning the Central Division, too. And again, it's going to be very close. And they can also finish third, too. I think that they're a team that can finish third, especially if they do deal with some injuries like they did last season. And I mean, they need to stay healthy. They need good goaltending. They need the coaching to step up. They need the blue line to step up. Like, I think that this team will finish first in the division. I know they have what it takes. Up next, the Minnesota Wild. Last season's record, 45-30-7 for 97 points, fourth in the Central Division. Key additions, Nico Sturm, Vladimir Tarasenko, and Nicholas Aube-Kubel. Key subtractions, John Merrill, Gustav Nyquist, Devin Shore, and Justin Brazil. First off, I don't know why I even put key when I'm just listing off all their additions and subtractions. like, okay.
Well, why don't you have their AHL contracts? Come on.
yeah, fair enough. Other notable offseason moves, they just re-signed Marco Rossi to a $3.5 million contract.
Why did it take him that long just to give him that? Like, yeah, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Marco Rossi was like, he originally rejected like a 3x5 or something, and then they came back to it. I don't know.
Maybe that was the best offer he got. So
Maybe it is. Maybe, I mean, Billy G is like, you know what? I guess you're not playing for us. I don't know.
I would attempt to call his bluff, but.
Yeah, of course. I mean, a young player with pressure on him, of course. But I'm high on this team, though. I don't know about you.
I'm mixed, right? I think this team lives and dies by Kirill Kaprizov. We all know this. Mm-hmm. They look like a completely different team when he's not on the ice. I think they arguably should have beat Vegas in the playoffs last year. They kind of blew it. Mm-hmm. Their one addition they made at the deadline, you know, here, Gus Nyquist. The only thing he contributed to them was going off sides when they could have potentially stole game 5 in Vegas and gone to game 6 going home with a chance to clinch the series, right? Uh-huh. And then after that happened, they were done.
They lost game 5 and they lost game 6.
Yep. But this team is Kirill Kaprizov's team. They'll go as far as he takes them. I think they haven't really done too much to address depth, right? Yeah. I mean, Tarasenko, that was a cap dump from Detroit. I think Minnesota actually gave up an asset for him, right? They gave up like a fifth-round pick or something like that.
Yeah, something like
that. So good for Detroit for getting something like them. He was horrific last year for them.
Brutal.
I just don't think he was a good fit for the Red Wings. Maybe, you know, having, you know, a fellow Russian and Kaprizov with him kind of give him a boost. But at this point, Tarasenko might be running out of gas, right?
Yeah.
But I hope their depth hasn't really changed. Can Gustafson repeat, you know, what he did last year? Last year was the best year of his was the second best year of his career. Technically, because he had a higher save percentage a couple years ago, but he only played in 39 games. This year, he's very consistent. They need him to be consistent again. So this blue line, I'm still kind of a mixed bag. I think Brock Faber's a stud. I think Zeev Bouyam is going to be a really good player. He ended up playing his first few games in the playoffs last year and didn't got a place, right? Mm-hmm. But then you got like Zach Bogosian, who's still in the NHL. Good for him. One of the last Atlanta Thrashers still playing in the NHL. I think him and Evander Kane are the only two Thrashers.
Correct. Left.
Good for them. Jarrett Spurgeon, too. I know he missed a bunch of time. No, he didn't miss a ton of time. The year before, he missed a bunch of time with injury. He played 66 games. He's their captain. Gonna need him on the ice, but yeah, this team—they're probably a playoff team, but I don't expect them to do any damage in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm looking at this team as they're a team that if Kaprizov plays 80 games, man, they're a fucking dangerous team. We saw them before he went out for the first half of this season last year. They were the best team in the Western Conference. They were up there with the Winnipeg Jets. And they were like, are they going to compete with the Winnipeg Jets all season like this? And when they got off to the hot start, it's like, this team's going to fall off. Kaprizov kept going. The Minnesota Wild kept going. And at one point, Kaprizov had like 70% of the team's points or something like that. Like, it was a ridiculous like pace he was on. And I remember last offseason where I had us not pick like the obvious choices for like the Hart Trophy. So like, I think I said no McDavid, whatever, like anybody else. Yeah. I still went with Kaprizov and stuff like that. And I was looking good. And then of course, you know, he goes down. Oh, yeah. And the wild look like complete shit, like you said. And once you went down, and it kind of shows you how much of a liability the depth can be, and how like you, Rossi and Boldy, they still need room to grow before they really become these true franchise centerpieces. And I think they are turning into that.
I think Matt Boldy's almost there. I think this year is going to be, I think he can be an 80 plus point player this year. I think Minnesota will need him to be if they want to have a successful season. Marco Rossi, I still don't know why they wanted to trade him. He had 60 points last year. His third year in the league. Why do you want to move on like a guy like that? I get he's a bit on the smaller side of 5'9", but like, come on, buddy, what are we doing here? Come on,
Bill. Not to brag about Marco Rossi, but he had better analytics all around the map, Boldy, but I'm not going to go there. I mean, overall, though, like having Kaprizov, Rossi, and Boldy on your team, you are set up great. And Wild fans in the media are high on Liam Ogren, who is a young and up-and-coming prospect who's supposed to slot into their top six on their second line next to Eriksson Ek and Tarasenko, which is great. And I like their blue line. I think I like them more than you, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Brock Faber's great.
Fine. Brock Faber's great. Their blue line's average.
Yeah, I think it's above average, but slightly. They're not a team where on paper it's, oh my God, this blue line's so good. It's more of a, okay, they can get the job done if I had them on my blue line, per se. So I overall look at this team as a playoff team, that's for sure, unless they just get killed with injuries, which I don't think is going to happen. And however, though, I do have them finishing a fourth in the Central Division.
Yeah, I think this is going to be – this could potentially be a crazier for the Wild if Kaprizov just – like, it's a contract year. He wants money. 120-point season, right? Something crazy like that. Kaprizov's totally capable of that, right? But I just look at the other teams ahead of him in the Central, and it's just really tough for me to throw him in that top three, right? I think you probably have the same problem.
I screwed up. I actually have them finishing third in the division.
Okay, yeah. Because you had Colorado finishing fourth, right? Which is, I think that's kind of a wild take. I have them fourth in the Central Division. I think they will be a wild card team. I think they're going to be – I think it's kind of going to be like last year. I think it's going to be kind of up to the last minute, because there's a couple teams also in the Central Division that I have finishing below, and I think are going to make really, really push Minnesota for that wild card spot.
I agree with that. I think the Central Division is probably the – what do we say is the deepest over the Atlantic, or are we still giving the edge to the Atlantic?
I would say I'd say the Atlantic's better because they have the two-time Stanley Cup champion, and then Toronto's really good. The Lightning are still really good. It's kind of the same where you have two not great teams in the Central, right, with the Chicago and Nashville. Like the Atlantic has Buffalo and Boston, right?
Mm-hmm. And so, Detroit out at their own.
Yeah, Detroit's kind of in an interesting spot too. Mm-hmm. I think they're kind of in a similar spot to another team in this division, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of competition. I think that there's potential six. You can make an argument for six teams in the Central Division making the playoffs.
I agree with that statement. Moving on to the Nashville Predators. Last season's record, they were 30-44 and 8-68 points, 7th in the Central Division. Key additions, Nicholas Perbix, Nicholas Hague, and Eric Halla. And their subtractions, Kiefer Bellows. They made no notable offseason moves. The only thing that Lugan Evangelista is still an RFA. What an exciting offseason this team had. They went out and got a ton of new guys on their team.
I think it was a case of, like, you know, they went all in last year, right? They were the all-season champions. They signed Jonathan Marchessault, Steven Stamkos, and Brady Shea. And it kind of all blew up in the face. And I think Barry Trotz was like, yeah, we're not big spending on free agency again until, like, there's a proven commodity out there, and I know this team will is good enough there for that, right?
Yeah, right.
This is one of the oldest teams in the league still. Their top six, I think they're all above the age of 30 right now, because Luka Vangelisca is one of their good, better young players. They need to get him signed. I'm not sure what the holdup is. They have $11 million in cap space. Maybe there's having a term issue. I'm not sure. We really don't know. I'm assuming that'll get done sooner rather than later. They don't really have a ton of young guys that really super high on. I know they did pick Brady Martin this year, fifth overall in the draft. I wouldn't expect him to play in the NHL this year. And honestly, I keep him away from the NHL team this year just to protect him.
You're sure about that? Or are we sure about that?
I'm sure about that.
I mean, I'm looking at this team, dude. I really am. And I'm at a crossroads now, because I'm going to spoil it. I do have them written down as sixth in the division. But I'm looking at them on paper, like hardcore, like I'm analyzing this shit. I don't know if they're as good as – I don't know if they're better than like two teams. Maybe they're just better than one team, and that's Chicago.
Oh, I think they're bad. Like that's where I was going with that. Like, I don't know if I was misleading you.
No, you weren't misleading me, okay. But I think I might be changing mine up in this moment, because you have Eric Halla as your third line center projected according to Daily Faceoff. Who is this Fedor Svechkov? Why is he projected? Hold on. I want to take a look.
He was a first round pick from a couple years ago.
Okay. He had 12 points in the AHL last season. He had 17 in 52 games in Nashville.
Oh, he'll pick up a team. Yeah.
I don't know Puck, apparently. I don't know Puck. Sorry, Nashville Predators fans. Okay, you know what? He was my thing. I'm probably going to hold on. I want to take a look at a certain team real quick before I make my final decision here. If you want to go, you can go on where you have them finishing.
Seventh place. Okay. I think this is they're too old. I think they're too slow. I do like the addition of Nick Hague. I think he's a good depth defenseman, good second pair guy. Roman Josi did miss a bunch of time last year, which he, I don't think he was healthy at all last year. Yeah. Even he played 53 games, but he was clearly fighting through something. And by the time dude, the season's over, get healthy. He ain't getting any younger either. He's 35 years old, if you can believe that.
Which is absolutely insane. It does not feel like he's that old, but he is that old. Same with Josi, not Josi, sorry. We just literally talked about him. Saros, he's 30 years old now. Their team's old. Okay, so I'm going back on my word here. They're not finishing sixth. They are finishing seventh in the division. Looking at another team that I had them finishing behind them originally, there's no way that team finishes behind Nashville. They're just not great. Like, you look at a lot of these guys on Nashville, I think they're like past their prime. Stamkos, he's 35. He wasn't great last season. Marchessault, he's 34. Ryan O'Reilly's 34. And of course, age doesn't necessarily matter, but it's just you looked at them last season and they looked so slow compared to every team. And this isn't a team that has, you know, these superstar vets like those four I named off with a bunch of young guys. Like, if they had players like a McTavish or a Caulfield or, you know, Rossi or Boldy, whatever, like, you can get away with having these guys in their top six be so old and slow with some faster guys. But the fact that they don't have anybody outside of really Evangelista and now Svechkov in the top six, like, it's just not a recipe for success. And maybe it will come back to bite me to go back on my word and where I had them written down in the division. Maybe they do finish sixth. Who knows? But on paper, again, I don't think that this team is very good. And going out and spending big last offseason is going to blow up even more in Barry Trotz's face. However, though, I do give him props for going down swinging rather than curling up in a ball. Although I do think that, and I know you said this before, where that make the playoffs a couple seasons ago gave them false hope.
Oh, for sure. I think Barry Trotz would admit that too. I think he was legitimately angry at this team last year, you know, especially with some of the roster moves he made, where he put Dante Fabbro on waivers, which I think was a mistake. And you know, he got claimed by Columbus immediately, and you know, the Columbus just signed him to a 4-year extension.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe Barry's a little in over his head. I know he was a great coach, but being a GM is quite different. And it's not going to be the same from year to year. You guys get older, things change. Yeah, this team is going to be a rough couple of years. Brady Martin was an interesting pick for me. I don't know if he was the best player there. Barry Trotz clearly likes his game.
There is a reason why he picked me up.
Yeah, no, Barry Trotz liked him. Yeah, he's a very physical player. I'm just saying, I don't know if he can be that complete number one center they need him to be. I don't know. People are probably saying I'm rage baiting, but I wasn't super high. I wasn't super high on the kid in the draft. You can vouch for me. I wasn't super high on him.
Yeah, he wasn't high. He wasn't high. They do have Matthew Woods still coming up through the pipeline as well, too. So that they picked a couple years ago.
This is a team that needs to sell older players and get assets back and start accumulating draft picks and starting to get younger.
I agree with that. I think, like, you can't wait too much longer to try to get younger and to get the assets, because at some point, if you wait two seasons, you're not getting anything back for a 37-year-old Stamkos making $8 million. You're going to have retain that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they're going to have to eat some money on some of these bad contracts. Like, I think, like, the Brady Shea one, I think, is untradeable.
Mm-hmm.
Marchessault, I think, too, just maybe in a couple years. But Stamkos, I think a team will trade for him at, like, half retention.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Forsberg is productive at 8.5. So.
The problem is, like, they have no movement clauses, so you can't trade them without their permission. Right.
Correct. I mean, on the bright side, it looks like Ryan O'Reilly does not have one. No, he does not.
It wouldn't shock me if they traded him at all.
It wouldn't shock me either. All right, let's move over next to the St. Louis Blues. Last season's record: 40-30-8 for 96 points, fifth in the Central Division. Their additions: P.S. Tudor, Nick Bjugstad, and Logan Mailloux. Subtractions: Nick Leddy and Zach Woloch. And their notable offseason moves: they signed Nathan Walker to $2,887,000 contract extension. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this team genuinely, because they have some great players like Buchnevich, Robert Thomas, Jimmy Snuggerud, like Jordan Kyrou, Jake Neighbors. They have guys, and the Dvorsky is projected to be in the third line role right now. We all know Dylan Holloway, coming over from Edmonton last offseason, had a career season. There's no doubt in my mind that this team can be good, but I don't know. There's just something that feels off. You know what feels off about it? Their fucking blue line. This shit pisses me off so much. It pisses me off. They have a really good top nine on paper, but their blue line is so old outside of Logan Mailloux and Philip Broberg. Actually, Broberg's actually getting up there in age too, isn't he? Or am I tripping?
He's 24.
Yeah. Okay. I was right the first time, guys. Yeah. So, I mean, Cam Fowler, I mean, he had a good postseason, but he's old. Justin Falk and Colton Parayko, old. So,
Parayko's still a stud.
He's an absolute stud. Yeah. He is.
Well, I know that this is a team that was very, very, very interested in Bowen Byram from the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres don't end up trading him. There were rumors at one point that they were throwing Jordan Kyrou's name in trade talks, which I think would have been a wild trade if they would have traded Kyrou to the Sabres for Bowen Byram. But this is a team that got really, 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 really hot down the stretch. Like, after the Four Nations break, they just probably were the hottest team in the league. Would you disagree?
I agree with that. They were the hottest team in the league.
And they rolled that in the playoffs. They should have beat the Winnipeg Jets. They blew game 7. That was one of the biggest chokes I've ever seen in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were up by 2 goals late in the third, and they give up that tying goal, man, was just brutal. Brutal.
Tying goal. No, that can't happen. That can't,
was it less than a second left or something insane like that? Yeah. They would have got the honor of getting their ass kicked in the second round, but nonetheless, like, that would have been crazy if they beat the President's Trophy. Best season ever having Winnipeg Jets last year.
Yeah, and that play too was a pass from across the ice from the left wing half boards all the way to Kyle Connor.
Yeah, it was just crazy.
That's like a Hail Mary right there.
Yeah. Like, my dad's a Jets fan. He was like, I'm not watching this shit. They're gonna lose. And then he called me. He's like, Oh my god.
That was insane. There were multiple times in that game too where Kyle Connor and Scheifele scored clutch goals to win the game or tie the game or whatever. And the Blues should have won that series. They should have won it in less than 7, sorry. Should have won it like 6.
Well, but, I mean, Connor Hellebuck can't play on the road. He was horrible in all 3 games in St. Louis in that round. But nonetheless.
Back to the Blues.
The Blues, see, they were kind of in a boat, I think, similar to Nashville from a couple of years ago, where Nashville got really hot down the stretch, mm-hmm. and they were like, okay, we're cup contenders now. We're going to go out and get the top three guys in free agency, right? St. Louis didn't do that. And they were correct to not do that, because I don't think they really have the money to spend. And they have a lot of their core players locked up on long-term deals, Kyrou, Robert Thomas, Pavel Buchnevich. I agree with you. Their blue line definitely needs to upgrade, and they tried desperately mm-hmm. in the offseason, yeah. from what I heard, to upgrade that blue line. It's hard to get young defensemen.
It really is hard, and a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to make a trade without getting fleeced.
Well, I heard it got to the point where they were even considering offer sheeting Bowen Byram, but then mm-hmm. that didn't end up happening because the Sabres were match any offer sheet he signs.
I did hear, too, that they were willing to offer Jake Neighbors as well. Obviously, you brought mm-hmm. up Jordan Kyrou, so, I mean, they were willing to give up a forward for a defensive
They were willing to give up a top six forward for Bowen Byram, and, you know, and Jake Neighbors is a good player, too. I don't think we mentioned his name yet. He's a good middle six guy for that team. This is a team that, they didn't really do too much to reinvent the team this year. I would expect more of the same. I don't know if this is a playoff team, though. I think this is a team that's going to be just right on the bubble of being a playoff team.
What else do you have making the playoffs then? Okay. One player who I want to bring up real quick before I get into where I have the making. Jimmy Snuggerud is about to fucking win Rookie of the Year, dude. I'm telling you.
Yeah, he was awesome for them in the playoffs.
Dude, he was awesome for them. I mean, I know he only had 4 points in 7 games, but it's more than just the stat sheet when you watch the playoffs. Like, he looked like he belonged there the same way as Demidov did, the same way as Zeev Bulium did in their playoff, debut. Yeah, debut is like he looks like he belongs. And I think he can be a dark horse Calder winner now. Okay, I don't mean to go on a limb and say he's going to win the Calder. I don't think he's going to, but he's a dark horse candidate. All right, where I have them finishing in the division now, I have them finishing fifth in the division. And yes, I do have them making the playoffs. All five teams are coming from the Central Division. And no, I know where you're going with the next team, and no, that team will not be making the playoffs. In my book, I think they'll just miss out.
I think – I'm not saying they're definitely not making the playoffs, but what I'm saying right now is I think they'll be sixth in the division.
Mm-hmm.
No playoffs. I do agree with you. I think five playoff teams come out of the Central Division. I just don't think the Blues are going to be one of them. I think it's going to be – I think they have a really good chance. Mm-hmm. I think it will be a battle right until the end of the year.
Yeah, it will definitely be battle, and I could see them in a team like Utah, for example, there's not another team in the Pacific Division, but like Minnesota, Utah, St. Louis, really battling for two wild card spots.
I would rule out everyone in the Pacific Division. I think Anaheim will be better. I think Calgary will kind of be in that conversation. They're not going to be that bad. Vancouver, they're not as awful as we're making it out to be.
I know there's probably no Calgary fans watching this. I'm sorry. I forgot about Calgary.
I don't know why you hate them so much.
I don't hate them. That was completely on accident. Okay. Moving on next to the Utah Mammoth. Last season's record, 38-31-13, 89.6 in the Central Division. Their additions, J.J. Paterka, Scott Perunovic, Brandon Tanev, Vitek Vanacek, and Nate Schmidt. Their subtractions, Michael Kesselring, Josh Stone, Nikita Stag, and Robert Bortuzzo. They re-signed Jack McBain to a 5x$4.25 million contract, as well as there is a report that's going around that Connor Ingram is being shopped around in the trade market. If not, he will be released. So there's that, I guess.
I think Utah had a really solid offseason. I really like the addition of JJ Paterka. They really mm-hmm. needed another scoring forward for that top six. I think that was one of the big things they were missing last year, was a real good scoring piece. They did give up a lot to get him. I think Michael Kesselring they'll miss him more than people think he will. He was a really solid depth blue liner for them. And Josh Doan, who knows what he'll end up being. He was mm-hmm. more of a guy that was kind of playing, like he scratched sometimes playing fourth row minutes, but yeah. I really like the addition of Nate Schmidt, too. I think they kind of view him as that replacement for Kesselring just for a couple of years. He kind of had a resurgence last year with the Panthers. He was really good for them. And Brandon Tanev's another good bottom six penalty-killing forward. I think they really rounded out their depth, and I think they're ready for a playoff run. The only thing that I'm kind of concerned about with them is goaltending with Vejmelka.
Vejmelka.
My opinion is a little shaky as a full-time starter. Ingram is fine as a backup. From what it sounds like, he's not going to be there much longer. Hence, they brought in Vitek Vanacek, who's a pretty decent backup. Like, you can do – I want to feel great about him being my full-time starter, but you can do – he's fine as a backup, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I look at Vejmelka as – he gets the job done, right? He's not a top 10, 15 goaltender in the league, but you know what? He's serviceable, right? Last season, he played 58 games for this team at a .904 save percentage. He only posted one shutout, but he did end up posting a win percentage of – I guess a points percentage of over 500. A .258 goals against last season. Pretty solid numbers, if you ask me. For a team that was really competing for a playoff spot for a lot of the season, unfortunately, they did fall short by – what is it, like 10 points or something like that?
It was a little too late for them. They started playing better, but at that point, they had kind of been out of it. And then you know, St. Louis wanted that crazy run.
It kind of pulled away from everybody. And I do love the addition of J.J. Paterka. How much it sucks as a Sabres fan and media person, whatever. Like, it is what it is. You have to move on. And, I mean, he's going to help the scoring a ton and throwing him on the top line with Genther and Cooley and the top six with Keller, Hayton, Nick Schmaltz. I love Lawson Cross, who does not get enough love outside of Utah. He's a very good third-line player for them. Same with Jack McBain. So they have talent all around the lineup. And I don't disagree with you thinking that they're poised for a playoff run or at least to make the playoffs. And I wouldn't be shocked if this team does end up making the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying like they're not going to make the playoffs with me saying St. Louis is going to make the playoffs. Like I said, they're going to be fighting with St. Louis all season for that wild card spot and even first wild card spot with Minnesota or Colorado, whoever it may be. So a lot of it's up in the air right now. I don't like their goaltending, but I do think Vejmelka is better than – you could do worse than Vejmelka, I guess I can say. So the blue line is good. And overall, if this team, again, like I said, makes the playoffs, there's nothing wrong with it either. Like, I think Cooley's going to take the next step. I think Genther can hit 50 goals at some point in his career. This season, no. I mean, he's a goal scorer, that's for sure. Barrett Hayton, underrated. So, again, I think the addition of J.J. Paterka might honestly be one of the better additions outside of Vegas acquiring Marner and the Hurricanes acquiring Ehlers and Keandre Miller. Well, maybe that's
JJ. He doesn't play defense. So
yeah, that's true.
Don't expect a lot. He might have a kind of a wild plus minus. He might have like 35 goals and a plus minus of like 6.
I mean, yeah, that's true. JJ Paterka, offensively, he's one of the better offensively gifted players in the entire league. But when you look at his defensive game, if he's not producing offensively, he's a liability defensively, and he's just kind of like a ghost, right? He goes on spurts, and who knows? Maybe his game gets more consistent throughout Utah because we saw in Buffalo – where he would go on ridiculous stretches of games where he's like 10 points in 7 games or something like that. And then he goes scoreless in 6 straight games or whatever. And then he gets it on again. He was hot and cold. Whereas I think in Utah with – I know he's playing with Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch and Dahlin, et cetera. But I think the overall makeup of the team like Utah is better than Buffalo, where he'll have a better supporting cast around him, better overall depth and players around him, playing with Logan Cooley and Keller and Genther, who aren't quite up to the status of Tuch and Thompson, but I think he has like Barrett Hayton and Nick Schmaltz, who are also going to be playing some special teams minutes with them as well, and I think they'll have better coaching. So overall, I do have this team finishing 6th in the Central Division, and honestly, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the top 6 teams all finished with 90-plus points.
Yeah, I have them finishing 5th place. I think they will be wild card 2. I think this is final of the year. They make that push for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a pretty up and down season with them. But I think they're going to – I think they're taking the right steps. And if it's not this year, I think next year will definitely be a playoff team.
Yeah, I think if it's not this season that they're so a year away. And I don't hate that take at all with you. Moving on to the last team of the episode, Winnipeg Jets, last season's record. 56-22-4, 116 points, first in the Central Division, also won the President's Trophy. Their additions, Gustav Nyquist, Jonathan Toews, Cole Koepke, subtraction, Nikolai Ehlers, Mason Appleton, Brandon Tanev. They also re-signed Dylan Sandberg to a 3x5.75 contract, re-signed Gabriel Vilardi to a 6x7.5 million dollar contract as well. So this team, they have high expectations you have your the best goaltender in the league in Connor Hellebuck.
Best goaltender in the world.
He is 1,000% the best goaltender in the world. Coming off back-to-back Vezina Trophy wins, and of course the loss of Nikolaj Ehlers is going to hurt a lot. But that'll hurt like a lot. But you still have Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, Vilardi. I'm excited to see what Jonathan Toews looks like in his sweater and how he plays on the ice. And
he would look weird in a non-Blackhawks jersey.
He's going to look so
weird. Yeah, I remember the first time Kane played outside of Chicago when he got traded to the Rangers, and it just looked really, really weird.
It didn't look right at all, and I think, dude, like, I know we're off topic here for a second, but Kane in a Rangers jersey, like, in 15 years, we'll be talking about, yeah, Kane had, you know, one of the better primes of the 2010s. Did you know he played for the Rangers, by the way?
Yeah.
Like, it'll be one of those. But, yeah, it'll look weird for Jonathan Toews in a jersey, and, yeah.
So this was a team that I did lose some depth in this offseason, right? Obviously, I don't think it was going to be really hard for them to find a way to retain Nikolaj Ehlers. I think they could, if he wanted to stay, I think they could have found a way to make it work. But, you know, it was time just to move on. I think Mason Appleton, he was a good depth piece. I think they'll miss him a little bit too. And Brandon Tapp, he was a rental at the deadline. It is what it is with him. Nyquist, I don't know. I don't know how much gas he has left in the tank. He was not good for Minnesota last year. Maybe on a more well-rounded team, he'll be a bit better. And we'll see what Jonathan Toews has left in the tank. But as far as I'm concerned, they still have an elite blue line. And they have the best goaltender in the world. Kyle Connor is a stud. They should try to get a contract extension with him done as soon as they can, because you don't want to risk him walking a UFA.
Yeah, that's one thing, like, I haven't heard anything about a Kyle Connor extension. Like,
that could be a good thing. Yeah, that could be a good thing. Maybe they're having productive talks and there's no reason to go to the media, because a lot of times in the media, it's someone from one side that's not happy and they want to get, they're putting pressure on the other side, right?
Yeah, it's just trying to gain as much leverage as
possible. Like Eichel, we're not hearing anything about a contract. We know both sides want to get a deal done, and I'm sure they'll get it done.
You know what? I bet you Kyle Connor and Jack Eichel, if they're talking about it, talk's probably going great, and we might just hear one day the Winnipeg Jets extended Kyle Connor, the Vegas Golden Knights extended
They have to extend Kyle Connor because if he walks in UFA, they're significantly worse going into the next season.
There's no – the Winnipeg Jets will make sure that Kyle Connor is a Winnipeg Jet past this season, guaranteed. Guaranteed.
But getting back to the guys that are under contract, Neil Pionk, I think, is a very underrated defenseman. He was great for them last year. Josh Morrissey, we know how good he is. I think he's a dark horse Norris candidate, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think he goes a little bit under the radar because of where he plays in Winnipeg. Might not get all the attention than a player of his stature normally would. Dylan Sandberg, too. They just extended him this offseason. People kind of raised their eyebrows at the cap hit, but he's an analytical gem, right?
Oh, my God.
We went over that with him. Mm-hmm. So, like, solid blue line, solid depth all around. It's just – can Connor Hellebuyck put his shit together in the playoffs?
If this team finishes anywhere outside of the top two in this division, I think it's a rough regular season. But when you have the talent that the team has, when you have Connor Hellebuyck, when you have the blue line, and I think they have one of the best blue lines in the entire league, it doesn't matter where you finish in the division. It doesn't matter maybe for Connor Hellebuck's sake, it matters if you have home ice or not.
I can't explain why he's so bad on the road in the playoffs. It does not make any sense.
Like, dude, he's lights out at home, but the second he steps on an airplane or a bus or whatever, and he goes to on the road, it's like a different
player. He wasn't that bad in the second round against Dallas when he had to play in Dallas, but in the first round against St. Louis, he was horrible. All three of the games in St. Louis, I think he got pulled in all three, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just awful.
And when you go over to the Dallas series, he definitely was not the reason why they lost series, which is a plus.
Yeah,
which is a plus if you're like, you know, on the counter Hellebuyck train, whatever. So, I mean, you still want to see this team put together a full postseason run. They haven't been to the Western Conference Finals since, what was it, 2018?
Yes, 2018. Yeah, they lost to the Predators, I think. Or was it Vegas?
Vegas. No, yeah, it was Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Vegas. Okay. Yeah, it was their first year in the league.
So I mean, Connor Hellebuck's a stud, dude. Like, I don't know. There's just so much you could say good about the team with, like, Cole Perfetti and their depth. Alex Iafallo is a great player. Shout out a Buffalo-born boy, by the way. So, yeah, overall, I like the makeup of this team. And I have them finishing second in the Central Division. It's going to be tight, though. It's going to be tight.
Yeah, I have them finishing third in the Central just because I think Colorado and Dallas are also both really good. This is going to be a very competitive division.
I don't think it is.
You're not going to see a team run away with this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think there's a good chance the President's Trophy winner comes out of this division too.
I don't hate that take at all. I mean, you look around the rest of the league, like how many teams, like the Atlanta division. I mean, I don't know.
Part of it too is like it could be a team out of like the Pacific or the Metro just because like the rest of the division's not great, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it'd be out of the question of Vegas won the President's Trophy at all. Right. They might be the betting favorite right now. For all I know, I think they're the betting favorite to come out of the Stanley, like Western Conference, and for the playoffs, win the Stanley Cup, as they should be. I think. Mm-hmm. I think they have one of the best teams in the league. But getting back to the Jets, this team will go as far as Connor Hellebuck takes them. He's one of those few goalies I think of all time that can really just put a team on his back and just carry his team. But he has to prove that he can do it in the playoffs. Like, he's just been so bad on the road. So bad.
Telling you, man, if this team gets regular season Connor Hellebuck in the postseason, they're winning the Stanley Cup.
I mean, maybe him being in the Olympics this year will, you know, help kind of him deal with that big, maybe a big game stress where he gets in his own head. And if he goes, you know, Team USA in the Olympics and he plays really well, brings home a gold medal, his confidence is back. He's like, look, I want a gold medal in the Olympics. Fuck. What? I need game 7 in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If he plays lights out in the Olympics, wins a gold medal, like, that could bring his confidence up. And, okay, I don't like to bring this stuff up about goaltenders games played because he is a Vezina winning trophy. He's a multi-Vezina winning trophy, whatever, a trophy winner. So he has played 60-plus games in his career. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times out of his 9-year career. And one of the years was the shortened season, 54 games. He played 45 of those, by the way. And he played 60-plus games the last 4 seasons. There's not a way, like, playing 60-plus games, like, will have this much of an effect on him? Or is that more like a...
I don't think it has yet. I don't think last year why he was so bad in the playoffs was fatigue.
Yeah, I think it was just poor performance. It wasn't like the 2023-24 playoffs. He posted an .870 save percentage and 5.23 goals against that
one. I mean, his save percentage was worse this year. It was 8.66. Goals against was better, but
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Again, the Winnipeg Jets, like you said, they'll go as far as Connor Hellebuck takes them. Real quick, I want to bring up, this has nothing to do with anything. According to 2 hours ago, Mason McTavish, he wants a 7 to 8 year deal. Anaheim only pitched him 5-year options, and a team insider added the Ducks offered McTavish a 5-year by $5.5 million contract. That is insulting. That is insulting.
I don't get it, man. I get it. There's a lot that goes into these contract negotiations, but when you got a player like Mason McTavish, who I think is just going to keep getting better, he wants to be there long term. You're the Ducks. You're looking for long term guys, right? You're in the middle of your rebuild still. You think you're getting towards the end of it. Do they not really see Mason McTavish? Is that like one of their centerpieces of their core? Like, I don't see why they just don't get a deal done. If he wants to be there for 8 years, yeah, you might have to pay him a little bit more up front. So it might go from like 5.5 to maybe like 7.5. But if he keeps getting better at the trajectory that a lot of people think he's going to keep getting at, it will be worth it.
Yeah, it definitely will be. I've heard Leo Carlson, they view him as more of a franchise player than Mason McTavish. So I don't know how true that is.
But even if he was getting like $8 million, that's not franchise player money.
Right. Like, anymore. Dude, give him an 8x8, man. Like, yeah. You have $20 million in cap space this season alone. Imagine how you have when the cap is expected to double in the next 5 seasons. Like, come on, give me a break.
We'll get more into them probably. Mm-hmm. Maybe by the time we record our Pacific Division previews next week, they'll have a contract signed with them.
Yeah, we'll see.
But until that happens, I think it should be a big talking point because he's missing camp right now. He's missing game time. He's missing preseason games. Same thing with Luke Hughes, is still not signed a contract with the Devils. He cannot be around the team right now because technically he's not under contract. So yep. There's a few high-profile RFAs still out there that are unsigned.
That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, head over down to the description below and go check out all of our socials. Subscribe, notification bell. New episodes are every single Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we'll see you guys in next week's episode.